You know, most pregnant women, they're always hungry. And our baby was almost 2 pounds when he was born. So if she would have went full term, he would have been a huge baby.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm sure she wasn't even paying attention to what they were doing. She was feeding her face, because I know Catherine. So that's what Carson had said.
Right. Now, does that add up to the physical evidence, or does the physical evidence really indicate that she was standing right there? I mean, he's, again, trying to protect himself here. So he's got her eating. In fact, was she standing there? I mean, what do you think really was the situation when the gun went off? You think she was standing with them, three people? You know what I mean? You just clustered around.
No, she wasn't. She wasn't, because I did see the crime scene photos. And I can tell from she was sitting at the table, and when she was shot, she went backwards on the floor, off the chair.
Right.
So, you know, you could see where the chairs tipped over, and you could see all the blood on the floor in the crime scene photos. And where Carson was, I don't know, honestly. But
all right, so,
I can tell you.
Right, go ahead. Go ahead, tell me.
It's a nightmare that you never get over.
Of course. I mean, I'm feeling it with you now. I mean, I wanted to make sure that the audience like me, when you take all this in, you don't take it too fast. Because you can't really appreciate what was happening here. So if I can review, they had a little, I don't want to call it a separation, but he allegedly threw her out a couple of days before. Then they get back together. And again, they're not married yet. This is the fiancé at the time. They're intending to get married?
No, Catherine and Carson were already married.
Already married. So this is, all right, her newlywed husband. Newlywed. They don't know each other very long, but they're newly married. She's pregnant. They have a lover's quarrel, whatever. You're 2 hours away from what you told us, right? So when she is having this difficulty, you're not in the neighborhood. You can't just drive around a couple of blocks and get to her. It's 2 hours away. Then somehow they get back together. Now they're hanging out, what, the very next day or a couple of days later after the get back together part?
A couple of days, right.
Now, a couple of days later, after they had this fight, first you're told it went off and here's what we were doing. Then you were told it went off, we were doing something else. Then you're told, well, no, we were really doing something else. If I have it right, they gave you three versions of what Mr. DeHaes, the owner and the shooter, were actually doing. Do I have that right?
Correct.
And then the authorities say to you, first, the detective. Now, when you said the detective might have been a friend of someone, he would have known Carson, or he would have known DeHaes?
DeHaes.
Perfect. So there you go. So the detective knows the shooter and immediately focuses your attention on that this is an accident, a terrible accident, but in fact an accident, and this guy's a detective. So a detective shouldn't accept accident. That's not his job, to write things off as accidents. A detective is supposed to detect what really happened. So it would look like right away this guy is buying into it. Then it doesn't make sense to you, because you're the mother. You love here. You have love. You have a feeling of protectiveness toward your daughter. You knew this guy was a little bit weird because they had a fight a couple of days before. He wants to break up with her. So right away, you know something is not right. Do you have any other suspicions? Before I ask you my next question, is there anything else lurking in your mind at the time that's even more nefarious than negligence and an accident? Are you starting to think anything else?
Well, yeah, I was starting to think murder.
I don't blame you, because this is what I would think if it was my daughter. No one's going to convince me. You throw my daughter out, then 2 days later, your friend accidentally, with three lying stories back to back, accidentally kills my daughter. I don't know that I could believe that. What did you start to feel about when it dawns on you that it could be murder? Would it be accidental murder, or was this guy Carson capable of finagling a situation that was really going to solve a problem for him? He doesn't like it, what's going on. He's not happy. You know how these men are. I mean, I'm a guy, but I've been around enough men. All you have to do is have a rotten egg like that. Then you have a weak-willed friend, or you know, somebody you can manipulate easily, and you have tragedy. What was your theory? What started to occur to you might really have happened in this case?
Well, what really started getting to me was, when I really started thinking it was murder, was after we met with the assistant state attorney, and he refused to prosecute. I told the state attorney, I'm not giving up. If I have to go to the White House, I will. I will get justice for my daughter.
Right.
I'm not stupid. I know how to read the Florida statutes. Well, my son-in-law was furious. He was so angry at me because I wouldn't stop. And I was totally floored, because if you love somebody, you fight for them. You don't just say, okay, whatever, and walk away. So this guy stops all communication with me on December 12th. December 13th, DeHaze marries his girlfriend, Christine. And all of his assets go into her name.
Oh, here we go.
Okay?
Here we go.
So this is where I'm putting all the connections together. So my son-in-law refuses to talk to me. He refuses to give me any of my daughter's belongings. He lies and says that he pays for the funeral and all these medical bills. He gets the check from the victim's advocate assistance program, never tells me about it. He didn't pay for anything. I paid for it all. I paid for her funeral. Her medical bills, there were none because she had Medicaid. There was no medical bills for the baby either. Now, my daughter has a surviving son that I'm raising.
Oh, my God. So you have a grandchild.
Oh, yeah. She had a, little boy.
How old is the little grandchild there?
At the time this happened, he was six.
Oh. When did this happen? How long ago?
A year and a half ago.
Oh, less than 2 years. So he's barely eight, if he's even eight yet. And he's lost his mom, and he, I'm sure, is picking up some kind of vibe that something's wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Here. He knows something's not right with the way his mom passed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He does.
So when you now establish that there's something that Carson is being, and that's your former son-in-law, is being protective of DeHaze, and he's resentful of you taking action to get to the bottom of it, what are you starting to think about Carson?
That it was a setup, that he had her killed. That's what I started thinking.
I don't blame you. I don't see another way to look at this. You said earlier that you have a friend who was a lawyer who accompanied you so you could get that police file. Does that person, or do other people who are friends and family also see what you see? Are they hearing what you hear here?
Oh, yeah. I have a professor, Eric Johnson. He's a law professor in Chicago who read my daughter's story and wrote up a blog for his law students on culpable negligence. And he sent it to me and said I could use it because DeHaze should have been prosecuted. There's another law professor in South Florida who is a commentator for a newspaper. And he wrote an article about guns and you should be charged in certain circumstances, which fits my daughter's case.
Wow.
So I asked if I could use that, and he gave me consent. Then I've had some attorneys, Maria Cazares, she's a former prosecutor for the state of Florida. She's a former PBA lawyer, and she's also a weapons expert. And that's how I found out the police didn't follow protocol because she read the case file online and she started instant messaging or texting me. So I talked to her and she told me, and she's been helping me also. But apparently Mr. King doesn't care for women too much.
Now, if I just want to do for the audience, Mr. King is Brad King, the state attorney?
Correct.
Okay, so he's got a little bit of a bias in these kinds of cases. He's got a track record of not being so protective of women?
Correct. I can give you an example. Michelle O'Connell, she was dating a Jeremy Banks in Marion County, which is a county that he also is state attorney over. And it turned out they ruled the woman's death as a suicide. It turned out she was murdered by the cop boyfriend.
There you go.
And so, he was the state attorney.
Right.
Prosecuting the case.
Right.
And thank God for that girl's parents. They saved their text messages, and they pursued it, and they got like over 100,000 signatures on a petition. And finally, the governor had it reopened in October of 2014.
Now, Governor Scott, you're talking about Governor Rick Scott, got this
yes.
other case reopened, not yours, but a similar
nope.
type of case.
Correct.
That also reflected negatively on this exact same state attorney.
Correct.
So you might be swept up in a ongoing corruption. That might be what happened
yes.
here. So if you now see, you know, I have to give you so much credit. My mom has passed, but I'm a big fan of moms. Moms have done so much for America, and I think this is a real window into you, a great mother. You really are a tribute
Thank
to all
you.
Moms, because you not only absorbed the trauma, and it would be enough to put many a mother off to the side. So, you know, it was awful. I just want to forget it. I go to church. I pray. I do what I do, but I don't revisit it. You are relentless. You are not going to allow your daughter's life to be swept under the rug, shielded, lied about, and covered and veiled in secrecy, because this is your daughter. You stand up for her no matter what it takes. Am I right?
That's right.
I got you. I got you. Oh, I'm so sorry. Do you want to take a moment? Take a moment there. Go ahead. I hear you. Listen, you're strong as the wall of China. You're strong. You're a very strong woman. But no one should think this doesn't torture you day in and day out. I don't care what they come back and tell you. They could do everything right, and you would still feel this extraordinary pain and loss. So if I were there, I'd put my arms around you. But I know you're a great mom. You're a tribute
thank
to
you.
Mothers, so thank you for having the strength to do all this with me on the air and to help other people, because that's the, you know.
I appreciate that you're helping me. I do, because a lot of people don't know I lost my granddaughter also, because my daughter and my daughter-in-law were both pregnant at the same time, and my daughter-in-law had placenta previa, and she was in the hospital. She had to stay there till she gave birth, but obviously when my daughter was killed, she had to come home
right.
from the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And she wound up delivering my beautiful princess, Jade, 2 weeks after my daughter's death. And my princess, Jade, lived 2.5 months before she died.
Oh, my God.
So we had 3 deaths in 3 months.
What?
And honestly, I did not feel like the Rock of Gibraltar. At that time, my husband was the Rock of Gibraltar, believe it or not. He kept me together.
We haven't spoken a word about this great man. So your husband was your rock when this was tearing you apart. And somehow you got the strength now. You're going at it gangbusters. what can you describe? I know everybody has an internal experience here. Can you describe how your husband dealt with all of this?
My husband kept everything inside. At nighttime, I'd wake up and I would see him crying and feeling angry because he's the dad. And he feels like he has to do something. And I think most dads think they have to do the wrong thing. You know, it's a man thing, I guess. You know, you hurt my girl, I'm gonna kill you.
I'm gonna hurt you. Exactly. Exactly. Right.
But my husband, you know, I kept telling him, no. I can't afford you going to jail.
Right. Right.
So, you know, and believe me, he gets very angry because it makes him feel less of a man for not doing something.
Right.
But
right.
I have to give him credit there because he has more strength than the average man, because the average man would have just went out and did it.
I understand that completely. If I were involved in something like this, I would cover for a dad that went and got his revenge. I don't think I'd be doing anything wrong there. But let me come back to the people who are supposed to do something here. That's the authorities. So from everything that had happened, how did they finalize, that is the state attorney Brad King, the assistant state attorney that you spoke to, the police department with the detective that started to put you off into this, oh, it was just an accident nonsense. How did they finalize this with you? As far as they were concerned, when did they say, this is the best we can do, it is what it is? When did they wash their hands of it?
Oh, they washed their hands of it on December 12th, 2014. All the letters in the world, all the lawyers that have contacted them, it doesn't faze them at all. They don't care about the media. They don't care about the petition. Okay? They don't care. Because according to the governor's office, the state attorney is untouchable. What he says is law. That's what the governor's office told me.
Because they're elected, right? Because they are elected.
Correct.
And therefore, there's nobody higher up ranking than they are.
Correct. And the only way to get it changed, first of all, is to get somebody to run against him. Too many people are afraid to run against Brad King because he's very politically powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody has run against him since 1989.
Oh,
the man
God.
Has been in office.
Wow.
In five counties. Okay.
How does that work? So he really is the state attorney, the final say-so for five separate counties in Florida.
Yeah, it's how they have it broken up.
That's horrible. I mean, right away, how are you going to get any justice out of that? What reception did you get from the governor's office? You mentioned that you contacted the governor's office to oversee what happened. They told you they could not. Did they offer anything else?
No. Nope.
No humanity here. There wasn't any, like, come up and see us. We'd like to try different angles on this. They really couldn't wait to get it out of their hands.
Yeah. No way. There's a petition going around about our governor. The people want him out.
It's a slap in the face to ordinary people. I see in the materials here, correct me or update this number, that you have over 13,000 signatures of people behind you who know that this is not right. It's immoral what happened. Number two, that they refuse to make it right. How did that happen? How did 13,000 people get behind you?
Because I posted a petition and I keep posting it and I keep it in the media. I have a lot of media people that are behind me. I have a lot of attorneys behind me that all say, and of course the attorneys have to be careful because they could lose their license. So they have to be careful in how they help me. But I keep it going. I will not let it die. I mean, eventually somebody is going to say, hey, enough is enough. We have to correct this wrong. And I'm certainly hoping that the FBI steps in and does like they did down in Miami, because they went down to Miami and cleaned house with all the corruption. So I'm hoping they're going to do that here, because after they told us that they weren't prosecuting, they gave the man back his guns.
Oh, my God.
And this past weekend, he was arrested for shooting off his guns in public.
This is DeHaes, the same guy that took that took your daughter's life and the life of your unborn grandchild. This guy was picked up for, say it again, what was he doing with his weapon? He was
shooting his gun in public.
Shooting in public.
And his neighbors got upset because it's in a mobile home park, so all the trailers are very close. And the neighbors called the police because he was doing this, and the cops could not arrest him because they didn't see it, even though they found shell casings, and he was drunk as a skunk.
Right. Surprise, surprise.
So they went and got a warrant, and they arrested him.
Right.
And he got out 3 hours later. He paid $100, and he got out. So he's out still, and he still has his guns. So now I'm putting it everywhere. Please be careful, everybody. This man is on the loose with guns. And, you know, I'm petrified. He's going to kill somebody else.
Well, this is where I wanted to go with my next question. And I got to thank you over and over, because you're holding it together in an impossible situation. But this is kind of my next question we're leading to. Mom, I said it before, you're a mother, not just a guest on my show. I think of you as a mother. I put my arms around you. If I'm there, I would say to you, what do we do next? What would you hope, from all of the pain, the suffering, the loss of her precious life, that little peanut that never even got a chance to live, what possibly could come out of this that would make your suffering worthwhile?
He go to jail like he's supposed to.
Boom. Just very simple. This guy deserves to be in jail.
Before he kills somebody else.
That was what I heard. I've been hearing that all through this interview with you. For some reason, God love you, and I'm sure he's got both hands wrapped around you. You are interested in saving others in spite of what you've lost. So many people who lose what you've lost would turn off to the world. How do you stay turned on to, A, setting the record straight, and then, B, you really do want to protect other mothers, other daughters, other unborns, other couples from experiencing this horrible tragedy? Do you know why? What is it about you, Nana, that would protect others when you yourself were not protected by society?
I certainly wouldn't want anybody to go through the pain and heartache I have gone through, or to feel like I have. It's a horror that never goes away. My life will never be the same again. And I can tell you, my new life is nothing compared to what my old life was.
Right.
You know, I have, the only thing that keeps me going is that I have to raise a little boy. And it keeps me going, because he will know his mommy.
Sure.
And even though he cries every night.
Every night.
And he was very angry at first, because he thought mommy went to heaven without saying goodbye to him. He was very angry at first. And now he wants to help get justice for his mommy. So when I go out and protest, he wants to help make the protest signs.
Right.
I try to shelter him as much as I can from this, because it's not his problem. It's mine. He's a child.
Right, right.
But they also told me, his therapist, because Nick is into, you know, counseling, the therapist told me that I have to allow him to grieve. And he has to be able to grieve the way he wants to.
Exactly.
And if he wants to help, then he can help.
That's right.
You know,
I think it's healthy for him to engage, don't you? I mean, he's had a horrible loss. If he feels like making these signs is helping make the situation better, you know, then absolutely. And what about this Rock of Gibraltar husband you have? So really, the three of you have each other now. But my God, it's just, it's hard to imagine what's gone on. How does your husband handle this from day to day now?
Nikki. That's how he does it. Nikki. He loves that child more than he loves his own life.
Right.
And if it wasn't for Nikki, I think my husband would have turned criminal. I really do, because Nikki is the light of his life, and he just loves Nikki, and I keep telling my husband over and over, this, we have to take care of him and raise him, and he needs you as much as he needs me. And Nikki just adores his grandfather. You know, grandma doesn't matter when grandpa's around. So.
Right, right. Right, that's the man. You know. He sees a man.
Yeah.
You know, I have to ask, you said you're from up north.
Yes.
Where exactly are you from? I'm familiar with up north, and I hear some up north in you, and I do want to make a connection for the listeners. Where do you originally hail from?
Long Island.
I knew it. I knew it. I'm from Deer Park and Plainview. What town?
Oh, God, Shirley.
You're from Shirley.
Suffolk County.
I know it well. I knew I heard some common ground between you and I. Your accent, the way you speak. Also, there's something else about you. You have an incredible amount of strength. And that's
not everywhere.
You have to come from some places to possess the kind of strength and commitment that you do. I'm going to ask you that we continue this as it goes along. I have a complete case file. I have this incredible interview with you that not only are we airing, but we are re-airing over and over. It's I think, so important for the public to get this. If it hasn't happened to you, it's impossible for you to understand really your situation. But in these kinds of interviews, I think two things happen. Number one, the public, it does get a better understanding. But number two, they understand why the actions that you're taking are necessary. Now they get it. Now they see why we have to stand up to a system that would minimize, trivialize, cover up, and then have a pattern of corruption, all it blocking justice in this case. Does that sound right?
Yes. Yes. And it's important, too, because you don't want to be a victim of something like this. Trust me, you don't. And that's why I think it's important these people know that he's still out there running around with his gun. I am petrified somebody else is going to get killed. And, you know, the police make light of it. The state attorney makes light of it. Well, it's their fault he's out there shooting his guns because they didn't take him away. So the public really is in danger as long as he's out there.
Donna, I can't.
You don't pay a consequence.
Right,
you know,
right.
Somebody's going to get hurt.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I can't stress enough our gratitude to you that you would put the time and energy into protecting the public after the way these public institutions betrayed you, betrayed your family, and ultimately betrayed your daughter's memory. I mean, we can't prevent everything, but we certainly can do the right thing in the face of tragedy, and it's deplorable, it's despicable, the way you were treated from the very first moment that you came in contact with the detective.
Yes, it is. But you know what? In the long run, I will have the last laugh because I'm not going to let this go. I'm not.
I know that. I can hear that loud and clear. So that's why I want to make a commitment to you as well. I'm sure that Lori made a similar offer that we will have you back. We will follow this. I will make sure that your story is told from coast to coast, because I'm sure right now, somewhere in Oregon, somewhere in Missouri, you know, somewhere in the middle of the country, this kind of thing is close to happening again, and there's a real chance that you could save somebody's life with the dedication that you've shown after your daughter's life and your grandchild's life was taken from you.
I hope so. I really do.
I believe that. How do you want people to follow up with you? Do you want them to go to your Facebook page? Because I see that that's got...
They can go to my Facebook page. I have a lot of people on my Facebook page. They can go to my Facebook page. That's fine.
And how do we give that out? I'm looking at the Facebook page, that address at the top. Do you go by DR? How does that?
D. Brian.
D. Brian 97 on Facebook?
Correct. Yes.
So go to D. Brian, just the way it sounds, the letter D, B R Y A N 97. They can friend, they can like, whatever they have to do, but they will see the story and they will be able to follow the story as it continues to unfold.
And they could also go on to change.org, where I have the petition. I update that petition as soon as things happen. I don't hold anything back. I will put out there whatever I'm told, word for word. Because I have nothing to gain by lying. You know, I try to keep everybody that supports me up to date to the minute like I am. And I think that's why I have such a loyal following, is because I don't lie and I keep it up to date and I prove what I'm saying.
You are the quintessential American mother in the modern day. Years ago, many mothers would not experience this. Today, too many mothers do. You're one of the few standing up for the victims and standing up to protect the victims that haven't happened yet, the potential victims, to keep them safe. My heart is all yours. I think you're phenomenal. I think in all the interviews I've done in the last 30 days, this one is the most important. So my thanks for your time. We certainly we will re-air this throughout the week and the weekend. We're going to stay on this story, and you and I are going to talk again on the air. Thank you so much, Donna.
Thank you so much, Ed. I appreciate all of your help.
I'll tell you what.
And thank you to the listeners for listening.
I was going to say, it's not just me. It's the hundreds of thousands of people all across this country have heard your story because you were brave enough to share it with us, and we owe you a great debt of gratitude. One more time, it's D. Brian 97 on Facebook. Donna, I'll be praying for you tonight, and I want you to have the best day that's possible.
Thank you so much.
You are quite.
Thank you.
You are very, very welcome. Donna Brian, our guest on StarCom Radio Network. An incredible story, a compelling story, and my thanks to the great Lori Zook, our weekend host, who brought this to our attention network-wide. Really no reason to